Good evening. I'm glad to be here tonight and to enjoy the song service and to enjoy the prayer. Say enjoy the prayer. It's a very good prayer. I appreciate the words on our behalf, especially the things that Brother Allen said. If those things are true, and he said them, and I believe them to be true, then I have accomplished at least in one person what I try to do. If there's any way that I can do anything to make the Word come alive to you like it has come alive to me, that's what I want to do. I have a great desire to do that any way that I can. Tonight we're going to talk about a subject called bringing them up. Now you might look at that and look ahead at the scriptures we intend to use and think, well, this is a lesson about raising kids, and it is. But it's much more about that, because it's a lesson about influencing young people, whether you happen to be the parent, aunt, uncle, cousin, neighbor, brother, sister in the Lord. If there's someone you can influence, this lesson's for you. And this doesn't necessarily have to be someone that's younger, because many of these principles that we're going to talk about are divine principles that apply in the way we deal with other people. It's just that I like to associate it with raising kids because that touches a lot of people. It's easy for us sometimes to pass off things that happen to somebody else, things we see on the news that happen halfway around the world. We just kind of let it go over our heads. But if you've had children and you see something on the news about something terrible happening to kids in a far-off land, that gets you. It's hard to pass that off and say that that doesn't matter, that doesn't touch me. So I bring this lesson to you because the Bible talks about the things that we should pass along to our children. We used part of this verse twice last night. Ephesians 6 and 4, "You fathers, provoke not your children to wrath, but bring them up in the nurture and admonition of the Lord." Now, let's focus on the three words we have highlighted. One is the negative side, two of them are the positive side. Provoke, nurture, and admonition. What does the word provocation mean? It usually comes from enforcing the rules. Provoke them not to wrath. Push them not to wrath. Do not inspire them to wrath. Don't motivate them. Don't give them an excuse to become angry. It usually comes from enforcing rules. But are rules bad? No, there are reasons for rules. Three reasons. The first rule is rules keep you from hurting yourself. If you have a young child and you see them toddling toward the edge of a porch, you're going to run get them if you can. If you can't get there fast enough, you're going to holler to make them stop, to turn, to see what's going on. You'll do whatever it takes to keep them from hurting themselves. As they get later on in life, you teach them many lessons to keep them from hurting themselves. You want to keep them from hurting others. They don't understand that if they take the hammer and hit your finger, that it's going to hurt. They see you hammering nails and different things like that, and so they want to hammer too. So you teach them not to do that. As they get older, sometimes children do other things to hurt other people. We don't want them to hurt others. And finally, the third thing is to keep them from hurting the environment. And the environment is just a word that encompasses things that aren't people. The first two things encompass people. Don't hurt themselves and don't hurt others. But you don't want them to be destructive. You don't want them to damage property. You don't want them to be disrespectful of what the Lord has put here. You don't want them to take physical blessings for granted. You want them to appreciate. There's three types of parenting as we go through this lesson I want you to think about. You might have seen, read some of this that I'm about to present to you before. I presented some of this before. And I'm sure that you will be able to see this in your parenting technique, some of these three or parts of these three, and in the parenting technique that was used on you or of others. The first one is called the authoritarian type of parenting, in which the parents try to control their children's conduct by establishing rules and regulations. Decisions cannot be questioned. The parent's word is the law. Does that ring any bells? Hard and fast. The problem with that is that the children of authoritarian parents sometimes are the most discontent, withdrawn, and distrustful. The way we teach our children affects what they learn and how they react. Second kind of parent is a permissive parent. The permissive parent makes few demands on the children. The first one, he tries to regulate everything. The permissive parent tries to regulate nothing. Do not attempt to shape their child's behavior. The children regulate their own activities. Does this extreme work any better? Typically not. The children of permissive parents tend to be the least self-reliant, the least explorative, and the least self-controlled. Now, are these three qualities that you would like for your children to display? They're three that I would want my two and my grandchildren, if I have any, and any of these children here. I want them to be self-reliant, or else they're going to be pulled by whoever is their most admired peer. I want them to be explorative, because unless they're explorative, they're going to take whatever information somebody feeds them. Now, question. Do you want to raise your children to be oysters or eagles? An oyster sits on the bottom of the ocean and sits there and soaks in whatever is washed into it. It just sits there. Whatever comes along, it soaks it in. An eagle, on the other hand, has to search, select it. He has to work harder. He has a harder life. It's a lot easier laying out there on the bottom, sucking in whatever comes by. It's a lot harder having to fly and fight for what you want. And work for your food, it's a lot harder. But which one would you rather your children be raised like, oysters or eagles? Self-reliant, explorative, self-control. We talked the other night about the temptations of the flesh that are out here in the world and how men must control their emotions unless they're going to wear blindfolds. Women also have desires. They must also practice control. Third kind of parent is the authoritative parent. Authoritative as opposed to the authoritarian. This is the one that I try to be. Make no bones about it. Encourage verbal give and take and explain the reason behind family policies. Limits are set, but the children's individuality is taken into consideration. Parents are warm and do not see themselves as infallible. They combine encouragement of individuality, open communication, and firm control to produce children who are independent, competent, warm, and nurturing. Bingo. What do you want your children to be like? Your grandchildren, the people, the children sitting on the bench next to you, what do you want them to be like? Do you want them to be able to carry on a conversation with an adult? Do you think children should be able to carry on a conversation? And I'm not speaking of being disrespectful, and I'm not speaking of speaking when not spoken to, but to speak when spoken to, and to carry on a conversation. You know, children early on learn to talk and carry on a conversation with their parents. But can we give them confidence to carry on a conversation with other adults? The children of authoritative parents tend to be the most self-reliant, the most explorative, and the most self-controlled. And that's what we would like to have happen. Now let's look at the other two words in that verse in Ephesians. Bring them up in the nurture and admonition of the Lord. Now, if I ask you right now what you think the meaning of the word nurture and admonition are, you'd probably say that nurture means simply to love them, and admonition means to kind of direct them. That would be pretty true, except the words might be reversed. Now, according to the definition of the words as translated into English, here's what a more fuller explanation of the words, what they intended to mean. Nurture means bringing up, training, education, instruction by deed, corrective educated discipline. Now get that. We read the other night in Proverbs where it said, spare the rod and spoil the child, so to speak. The child without the rod and reproof will cause shame to his mother. And so we might get the idea, we'll just beat him. Heavy hand, just beat him. No, that's just discipline for meanness' sake. And discipline for meanness' sake is not worth anything unless you're trying to raise mean kids. If you're trying to raise snakes, treat them like snakes, and you'll raise snakes. Corrective, educated discipline. Discipline is always for a purpose. It always has a goal of making the child better, of teaching the child something, so that the child will not hurt himself, others, or property. That's the whole purpose of corrective, educated discipline. Chastening, chastisement, instruction. Admonition means a mild rebuke or warning, any word of encouragement or reproof which leads to corrective behavior, advice, gentle reproof, and warning. Now, why would a parent want to pass this on to the children? Bring them up in the nurture and admonition of the Lord. How does God approach you? When you read the Bible, what's the message that you get from God when you read the Bible? When I read the Bible, I get this message right here. I get a message of nurturing. I get a message of admonition. I get a message of corrective educational discipline when I read the Word. I get reproof. I get warning. I get mild rebuke. This is exactly what I get when I read the Bible. So if I could pass this on to my children, and you could pass this on to yours, then when they read the Bible, they won't think there's anything in there unusual because they grew up being treated that way. See how family life and church life just goes hand in hand? It just goes hand in hand. The principles are the same. God treats us like He wants us to treat our children. So when we pass them off, when they get of age to start making their own decisions, and we have to face the fact that we've got to cut the strings, and it's time to cut the strings, and we pass them off to the Lord, they're just moving into another set of hands. They'll treat them just like they've already been treated. It won't be anything different. They'll just be going to the book to get the answers instead of coming to us. See how sweet that is? All of this sets the tone for the family. Children will seldom rise above the parents' limits or expectations. Now think about that statement. Think that's true? Parents are the idol of the children. Parents often live the goal lifestyle of the children. Sometimes the children want to live up to the parents. Oftentimes they want to exceed what the parents do. Now, we'll seldom rise unless inspired by somebody else or inspired by something else. So what does that tell us as parents? Set your limits high. Set your expectations high. Don't put a low ceiling on your child. Don't tell him he can't accomplish it. He won't ever make it. He's not good enough to do this or not good enough to do that. Set the limits and the expectations high for him. Children will test the limits no matter where they're set. This is limits of discipline. They'll test the boundaries you put on them wherever it is. If you were to tell your child not to drive 60 miles an hour, he'll try to drive 65. If you try to tell him don't drive 90, he'll drive 95. Test the limits. So expect it. And then don't kill them for it, but guide them gently back into the right way. Fathers sometimes set the standards, mothers maintain them. Think of this. Who's usually the big disciplined bad guy? The father. But then when the father's gone to work and the other things he has to do and he's out of the house, who is it whose lot it is to maintain that line that the father sets when he's there? The mother. Now, the point we want to make here is what happens when they don't pull together? What happens when there's mixed signals? What happens when one parent, when he's there, pulls one way and another parent pulls another way? Big mixed signals. Big mixed message. The next few minutes, I want to go over something with you. And what I want you to do is to look at the principles that are described. I don't have verses for these. There's about 11 or 12 items we want to throw up here. But what I want you to do is to think of the principles, the godly principles that you know are embodied in the things we're going to say. About four of these things are negative, and then it switches over to the positive. Children learn what they live. If children live with criticism, they learn to condemn. Now, many of you probably are familiar with this. It's part of something that's like a poem. It has like different verses. They don't rhyme, but they're different things. And what I'm trying to do is to break down each one of them and make a few comments. If children live with criticism, they learn to condemn. If mama and daddy criticize other people and the children sit around and listen to it, what are they going to do when they get old enough to express their own opinion? They'll follow right in mom and daddy's footsteps. They'll condemn as well. If children grow up being criticized and hearing criticism of others, they may never want to save others. Oh, sorry, so-and-so. He deserves what he's getting. Why would you want to go save somebody that you've heard your mom and daddy talk bad about? The children may develop a throwaway, runaway attitude. Instead of sticking and trying to save someone, it's easy to dismiss them as worthless, always have been worthless, always will be worthless, so I'm going to get away from them. A throwaway, runaway attitude towards other people's souls. If children live with hostility, boy, this one's beginning here, isn't it? If children live with hostility, if they see mom and daddy fighting and scrapping and listening to harsh, angry words, what are they going to learn to do? They're going to learn to fight. They'll develop an attitude to solve problems with a bigger hammer, a louder voice, a harder stroke, a bigger hammer. We must learn to solve problems and not smash them. And we must pass this on to our children, no matter how frustrated we get. Solve problems, not smash problems. I worked with a lady that had a son who came to a violent death at a very early age. I don't know if this had anything to do with it, but she would tell me how angry that her husband would get at different things. And apparently his son watched this and learned well, because she told me that one weekend her son was out working on his car. And it was like one of these deals where you fix one thing and something else breaks, and you fix one thing and something else breaks. And she said he got so angry that he took a hammer and he broke out the windshield and two or three other things on that car. What was he doing? Living out what Daddy had taught him. There are people that cannot control their emotions any better than that. We must learn to solve problems. Parents are the key role to teach the kids that you solve problems. You don't smash it. Sometimes the hostility leads to something you wouldn't think. Sometimes the hostility leads to withdrawal and abandonment, both physical and emotional. Do you wonder why divorce rate, even in some churches, is 48% or 30% or 20%? Or why there's even one? Why is there even one? Because somebody had an attitude to abandon or to leave or to not stick and try to make a difference. But just to throw up hands and say, I deserve better than this. Do you? If you're in Christ, what is it you deserve better? If you've been given a hard road to hoe, who says you deserve any better? Who said we deserve the first breath we breathe? Who said we deserve to breathe the breath we breathed a year ago? And now we've been given another year of breath. If children live with ridicule, they learn to be shy. If children are never good enough for those at home who should love them and want the best for them, how can they behave with confidence among their peers? I had a peer pressure lesson years ago, and that lesson must have hit some nerves because I got a bunch of compliments on that. I had no idea that it was going to go over as well as it did. I felt like I was taking a chance when I wrote it, and it got sent out to a lot of different places, and I used it in a lot of different places, and apparently A lot of people like that lesson. I had no idea whether it would be accepted or not. But apparently it was. Peer pressure is awesome. Peer pressure is awesome to pull people and hook them into spontaneous activities. But it can also be awesome in pulling people toward good activities. We must instill in our children confidence to be the source of good peer pressure and not be pulled into bad peer pressure. Think of this. It takes less investment on the part of the parent to ridicule. Now, last night we talked about the controlling part of behavior. Now, I don't know that I stressed this, but one reason that people are so easy to drop into the controlling behavior is that's probably one of the easiest to get in. And it's the easiest to stay in. You just tell people what to do. It's a lot easier to tell somebody what to do than to teach them and tell them 10 times how to do something so that they'll learn themselves. Just tell them. Just micromanage. Just tell them. Got a saying on the wall that says, if you feed a man, if you give a man bread, you nourish him once. If you teach him to plant, you nourish him forever. It'll take you less time just to give him the bread. Take you less time. That's less investment. That's less time investment on your part just to give somebody something. But to teach somebody to be self-sufficient takes longer. So as far as parents go, it's easy to ridicule. It's easy to find fault. It takes a longer time. It takes more investment of yourself to teach. If children live with shame, they learn to feel guilty. If parents tell children they're wrong and unworthy, they're going to believe it. Because mom and daddy's mom and daddy. Mom and daddy's God right now. And if they tell me I'm worthless, I must be. Must feel shame to become a Christian, but then the shame and guilt must be gone. See how our private family life's got to blend over into our church life. We want our children to feel like they're worth something so that when they come to the Lord, they'll also feel like they're worth something. So they can make someone else feel like they're worth something. Now we switch over to the good side. This is the good side. If children live with tolerance, they learn to be patient. Not tolerance to put their physical or spiritual life in danger. We're not talking about tolerance to engage in immoral activities. But we're talking about giving them a chance to fail. They learn to be patient. Teach them patience to figure out their problems. Learn to solve their problems, not smash them. Give them faith in their ability to learn to do. One of the best lessons my dad did for me was to go to an old car and take the carburetor off that car and hand it to me and tell him to take it apart and put it back together. Now, the carburetor wasn't running. He didn't have anything to lose. But I thought that was the grandest thing because he gave me an unsupervised chance to fail. Think of it. He gave me the chance to fail. And I did it. I had more parts left over when I got to put back together. I never did get that linkage put back on that carburetor. But I learned that he would give me a chance. And I learned I could fail. And I learned that when I failed, I could still be accepted. Because he didn't criticize me when I didn't get it put back together. And that is a lesson that stayed with me to this day. And I try to pass this lesson on. Listen, people deserve a chance to fail. And when you micromanage, when you control, when you tell someone what to do, and then when they don't perform, you cut the hand off, you're not giving them a chance to fail and still be accepted. And what does God in heaven do? He says, if you fall, and you come back to me, I will forgive you. I will forgive you. You're not worthless. As long as you come back to me, I'll accept you and take you back. If you fail, come back to me, and I will take you back. And it will be forgotten if you repent and pray for it. It takes time to teach tolerance. But isn't that the definition of patience? If children live with encouragement, they learn confidence. It takes patience on the parents' part to make children feel that they can. And if there's one thing that we've got to do in our lives is to teach children that they can. That's it. Teach them that they can. It's easier to do things for them, but to build confidence is better than the task at hand. Mothers, if you give your child, your daughter, if you give them a task of sweeping the floor, is it more important that the floor gets swept or that your child learn the value of trying to do the job best they can and being praised for the effort they put out? Fathers, if you give your son a task of cleaning up the shop or putting your tools up, is it more important that the tools get put up, or is it more important that your child gets praised for the job that they did? And if they're praised, they'll want to do the job again and want to do it better. But if they don't do it quite right and they get ridiculed, they'll be afraid to do even that good the next time. Once we become parents, we have an awesome responsibility. It changes our whole outlook. Once we become parents, or until we become parents, we're probably, as being of what they call European background, we are achievers. We want to get the job done. You study histories of civilizations and things like that, you know what I'm speaking about. We want to get the value in life is in getting the job done until we become parents. Now, when we become parents, the goal is still get the job done, but the emphasis shifts from getting the floor swept and getting the tools put up. The job becomes teaching our children confidence so that they can function as an independent adult. Sad to say, but as soon as our children hit the ground, our job from then on is to get them ready to leave us. Is to get them ready so that we can cut the strings and turn them loose. Isn't that not ironic? They come in your life and you love them to death. And if you do your job, you'll train them to leave you. And if you do your job, you'll let them go. How cruel is that? But that's the way God laid it out for us. That's the way He laid it out for us. If children live with praise, they learn to appreciate. Praise leads to respect of things and people. And respect leads to appreciation and not taking things for granted. Use it at the right time so that it won't appear fake. The right amount of praise is music to the child's ear. At work, I mentioned to you the public relations course. In that course, it teaches us that there's an 80-20 rule of criticism and praise. If you have an employee and you know that they have messed up and they have developed a bad habit, they're not doing something right, and your job is to correct them, when you go and have a conference with them to correct them, think of good things that they've done and praise them on the good things so that you praise them for 80% of your time and then you criticize them for 20% of the time. See? You're building them up. You're building them up for 80% of your comments, but corrective, educated, discipline for 20%. But it's easy to go the other way with our kids, isn't it? Because, hey, they're my kids. I can do anything I want to with them. I can talk to them. When I'm at work, I have to observe all these rules. But when I come home to my kids, forget that 80-20 stuff. I'll criticize them and I'll ridicule them and I'll fuss on them 80% of the time and I might praise them 20% of the time. Ooh. You shall reap what you sow. The Bible is so true. You will reap what you sow. If children live with fairness, they learn justice. So true if you have more than one child. Fairness. One child gets beat for something and another child does the same thing, he better get beat too. That's cruel. That's crude. But the point is, discipline is discipline. And a child that's been disciplined harsh And then he sees another child that doesn't get this one that harsh, but the same thing. For even his eyes, what's the same thing? He's learning unfairness. He's learning injustice is practiced in our household. Must treat people fairly in public. In private, children must learn the meaning of no respecter of persons. If children live with security, they learn to have faith. Now, parents cannot give 100% physical security. You say, wait a minute, I can. I can fully take care of my children. No, you can't. You can't watch them 24 hours a day. You can't watch them every minute. You cannot give them 100% physical security. But, I'm an engineer. We have an engineering term that says, I cannot theoretically do something, but I can get close enough, it won't make any difference. Now, with 100% spiritual security on the part of the parents, you'll get close enough to 100% security in everything. So give your child spiritual security. Listen to this. A child said this, it makes me feel good to see my parents holding hands. That's a little thing to the parents. But to the child's eye, that is security. That is security. If children live with approval, they learn to like themselves. Self-image is very important. Self-image. It leads some people to have confidence and to be givers and builders. But the lack of this leads some to embrace failure and to be takers and destroyers. Givers and takers. Are you a giver or a taker? You probably don't know. You probably can't see yourself close enough to truly know if you're a giver or a taker. But let me ask you, what about your spouse? I bet you've got an opinion there. Is your spouse a giver or is your spouse a taker? What are they? What are you? What about your mom and dad? Was your mom a giver or a taker? Was your dad a giver or a taker? Look at your children. They all have different personalities. Is you got three kids. Are all three of them givers or takers? Or which one? Which one? It's easy. It's easy for the oldest to be the taker. Because the oldest was the first and got all the attention to start with and didn't have to fight for it. That's just the way it is when you got kids. You just have to be careful the way you raise them, what you give them. If children live with acceptance and friendship, they learn to find love in the world. Parents should want children to look for lovely things. This is necessary to look for lovely things beyond this world. Okay, we're going to start closing down now and get into the scriptures. I tried just to give you a background, and I felt like you were comfortable with what I just did because I feel like it was based on Bible principles that we understand, how you treat other people. Let's look specifically at three areas of nurturing and admonition. Let's look at materialism, let's look at morality, and let's look at family worship. Okay, materialism, a couple of passages here. The road most traveled, and this is from a takeoff on the poem, The Road Less Traveled. But this is the road most people go to. 1 Timothy 6, verses 6 through 10. But godliness with contentment is great gain, for we brought nothing into this world, and it is certain we can carry nothing out. That's the road least traveled. And having food and raiment, let us be there with content. But they that will be rich fall into temptation and a snare, and into many foolish and hurtful lusts, which drown men in destruction and perdition. For the love of money is the root of all evil, which while some coveted after, they have erred from the faith, and pierced themselves through with many sorrows. Having your children look at money, probably the same way you do. So, if you see something in your children that you don't like, chances are good it's a reflection coming off of you. What about something different than materialism? I love this passage because it lays out two different things from two people who are sisters. Two sisters, and you live in the same household, and yet these two sisters chose a different path, and Jesus pointed it out point blank. In Luke 10:38-42, it came to pass as they went that he entered into a certain village, and a certain woman named Martha received him into her house, She had a sister called Mary, which also, look, sat at Jesus' feet and listened. Heard his word. But Martha was cumbered about much serving and came to him and said, now get this, Lord, do you not care that my sister has left me to serve alone? She didn't go to Mary. She went to Jesus as if he was at fault. Bid her therefore that she help me. Jesus answered and said unto her, Martha, Martha. And any time Jesus used a double name to pronounce, you can just feel the passion, like Jerusalem, Jerusalem. Martha, Martha. Can't you just see it? Saying it softly, Martha, Martha. You are careful and troubled about many things, but one thing is needful, and Mary has chosen that good part which shall not be taken away from her. Please let that last statement just burn right into you. Teach your children what the good part is. Let them see the good part in you. What about morality? Movies, music, and television. I don't think I really need to go into this. I think I've said enough this week. But movies, music, and television. You know it's sort of bad when you pull up at a red light, and if you got your window down, and sometimes if you don't have your window down, somebody pulls up right beside you, and they got the thump-thump going, and they're saying stuff, and you're just hoping, Lord, please, don't let me hear, don't let me comprehend what's about to come out of that radio. I'm not saying it's all bad. I don't listen to it enough to know whether it's bad or not. But I know this, that a few years ago, that there was a lawsuit against one particular rapper who came out with a tape and a record, an album, CD, of a collection of songs that was labeled obscene. It went to court, and I remember this statement. The judge said he listened to 90 seconds of it and said, shut it off, it's obscene. He had heard enough in a minute and a half of a whole CD. He said, that's it. I don't need to listen to any more of that. Now, our kids are bombarded with that stuff. They may not listen to it, but they may have friends that listen to it. They may go over to somebody's house to stay. You don't know what they listen to. You may not let it go on at your house, but they may go over and listen to this stuff. I mean, it's... Carol and I were chaperones for a singing concert thing in Auburn. We're staying in a motel down there, and the guys that were staying next door to us were part of our group. And about midnight, they were playing this, they called it music. But it was such trashy stuff. I put my clothes on, went over there, opened that door, and I said, you cut that off. Don't you play that stuff when people can hear that stuff. That's how bad it was. And I'm a pretty calm guy when it comes to defending some other people's kids, especially the three boys that all three of them together could have whipped me. But they needed to know. They deserved to know that that junk was not right, not good, and that it would not be tolerated without somebody calling them down for it. And movies and television. 1 Corinthians 15:33. All we need is just this verse. Be not deceived, brethren. Evil communications corrupt good manners. Now look. It doesn't say evil communications prevent good manners. It indicates that person has good manners, and if they allow themselves to be in the presence of evil communication, whether it's their friend or whether it's multimedia coming in, if they allow evil communications to come in, it will corrupt the good manners they've got. Please, let's pay attention to this. Avoid planting seeds, Ephesians 5:3-4, but fornication and all uncleanness or covetousness. Let it not be once named among you as to come as saints. Now to get specific. Neither filthiness, which by definition of the words is obscenity, nor foolish talking, which is silly talk or buffoonery, or just carrying on foolishness with no merit, no good, or nor jesting, which means witticism, or rivalry, making jokes in a vulgar sense, low, mean, vile, obscene talk, which are not convenient, but rather giving of thanks. Well, first let's talk about this kind of talk. Jesting, foolish talking, filthiness. So easy. And we hear that if you're at work, you probably hear this stuff every day. If you're in school, you probably hear this stuff in the hallway every day. But it should never be heard in our homes. Our homes must be a haven of rest, a safe haven for our children. Now, which are not convenient. Does that mean that if it's not convenient to do these things, that it's more convenient to simply be quiet or tell the truth? I don't know if that's what he's trying to mean or not. But have you heard the expression that so-and-so loves to stretch the truth and tell dirty jokes, that he'd rather climb a tree to tell a lie than to stand on the ground and tell the truth? You ever heard that? You know what that's saying? It takes more work. It takes more mental effort to think of something witty to say, something vulgar to say, to reduce yourself to bathroom humor, so to speak. That's my term. You may not like it, but come up with one yourself. But there are individuals whose thing in life is just bathroom humor. Surely, we can have class about this. Family worship, praying together, Luke 11:1. It came to pass that as he was praying in a certain place, when he ceased, one of his disciples said unto him, Lord, teach us to pray, as John also taught his disciples. Now, use this verse to emphasize the part about teaching to pray. Teaching to pray. Even Jesus Christ was asked to teach to pray, as John taught his disciples. So that tells me that the ability to pray can be passed on by teaching, and it ought to be. 1 Thessalonians 5:1, pray without ceasing. Let Christ live in us. Do our children see that? Sure they do. I hope they do. Galatians 2:20, I'm crucified with Christ, nevertheless I live, yet not I, but Christ lives in me, and the life which I now live in the flesh, I live by the faith of the Son of God, who loved me and gave himself for me. Now, any time that you get the idea that it's too much trouble to do the things that I've mentioned tonight to your kids, you sacrifice too much of your own pride and ego, of your time, of what you want to accomplish in life, to give enough time to your kids to teach them patience, self-reliance, to be explorative. Just think about what Jesus did for you and what he did for me. He gave up his life. Not only did he give up his life, I mean, Jesus didn't even live to a ripe old age, to a time when most people died anyway. He gave up his life in the prime of his life. I'm 53 years old, and if we know the dates right, I've outlived Jesus 20 years. He gave up the life that I have been privileged to live for the last 20 years. And he said, be gone with it if I can be the sacrifice of the world and influence other people. He gave it up. And if Jesus can give up that much of himself for our salvation, then how do we even compare with giving up of our time to train our children in the right way? This is the last thing we're going to talk about. Parents must also learn from their children. Mark 10:13-16. They brought young children to him that he should touch them. And his disciples rebuked those that brought them. But when Jesus saw it, he was much displeased and said, suffer the little children to come unto me, and forbid them not, for such is the kingdom of God. Verily I say unto you, whosoever shall not receive the kingdom of God as a little child, he shall not enter therein. And he took them up in his arms, put his hands on them, and bless them. I'm so glad that passage is in the Bible. Jesus loved the little children. We must be like that. Why? Because two or three reasons. The children are just, they're just happy just to be alive. They hadn't learned yet to want things except to be, usually to be full and to not be in pain. They're content. They don't have this presumptive thinking in which they think good and bad about people. They're just there. They're forgiving. They more or less live in the moment. And while there is an aspect of living in the moment that's bad, it's good if Christians would live in that moment and be the best they can be and appreciate that breath they're fixing to draw and not be all bent out of shape about what happened that can't be fixed or what's going to happen that they can't change. But children have a pretty good knack of living in the moment that they're in. And learn from our children. Watch our children. We've talked so much about bringing them up and teaching them. But at this point, I'm going to leave you with these thoughts. Learn. Learn from your children. I mentioned to you about the times I went around and taught this course around the state. At the introductory part of this course, we had about 5 questions that everybody had to answer. And they had to give a verbal answer for it. And it listed different things. And one of the questions was, who is the person or persons that's been the most influential in your life? And without hesitation, I took the test too. I was part of the group every time, 14 times, without hesitation. 14 times I said, my 2 sons. I had a lot of teachers that taught me a lot of things. And they gave me a lot of knowledge and they gave me a lot of inspiration. But when it came to them, I had to practice it. I had to make the connection between what I'd been taught and how I was supposed to act. That was the influence that they were on me. And if I could have been half the influence on them that they've been on me, I feel like I've been good. Because that's how much they've influenced me. And we learn from our children. Learn from the creativity. I'm going to tell you 2 stories and we'll quit. Gave Chad a job of taking garbage out to the road. That's all you got to do. It's about 60 feet from the carport to the edge of the road. 60 feet. It would take 2 minutes, as little as he was, to do it. But did he walk it out there in 2 minutes? No. He took about 30 minutes to an hour figuring out how to tie the trash can behind his bicycle so he could pull it out to the road. Creativity. Now, what would have happened to his little spirit if we had run out of the house and started fussing on him right in the middle of that and told him he was crazy for even trying that? Just fussed on him. Been critical. What would have happened to his little spirit? Been bad, wouldn't it? Brad taught me the lesson about watching and giving him things to do and seeing how he figures it out. There was one time that we were in for our help walking with our neighbors and it'd get cold at night. And I ordered one of these rabbit fur skin hats. It looks like an old bomber Russian hat. It's got the flaps. You pull it down over your head and the flap in the front and the chin strap under the bottom. He was wanting to wear it out with his friends one night, and when he walked into the house, I looked at him and I didn't realize you could put that hat on backwards. But he had put the hat on backwards and folded the bill, the back of the hat, folded it down and strapped it under his chin. He had a little hole about this big to look at. And I first looked at him and I thought, what are you doing? And I realized he put the thing on backwards. But you know what? We began to walk and as it got colder and colder, one night I just thought, well, I'm going to see if I can wear that hat backwards. I turned that hat around backwards and you know it wore better backwards than it did forward. Because the bill went down the back of your neck and it kept the back of your neck warmer and the front folded up around your eyes and it kept your face warm. And I would never have thought of that if I hadn't given it to him and not told him how to use it. And I learned then. Watch him. Watch him. Watch your children. Don't micromanage. Don't let them get hurt. But put them in a position to fail. And then let them see how you handle their failure. You'll teach them a lesson that will be far greater than whatever the job was you gave them to do in the first place. And doesn't that go a long way, hopefully, toward getting them to believe in the Lord? Because is that not the way He handles us? Please think about the thoughts in this lesson. Your attention has been so great, so wonderful. Thank you. If anyone are here tonight, subject to the gospel call through obedience and baptism and conversion, or through the prayers of the church, please let us help while we stand and sing.